Hey, Mosaics listeners. We have an exciting conversation to share with you this episode. We got to be on CityCast Boise's podcast. Moses Mukengezi joined me. You might remember Moses from a past Mosaics episode, but he's a great colleague in the Boise community. He himself came from a refugee background, and he joined me to do an interview with CityCast Boise. So they are letting us share that conversation here with you today. Moses talks about his experience, what his family's currently going through, and I share about the ongoing pause in refugee resettlement. And we also talk about the rich history of resettlement in Boise. So be sure to check out CityCast Boise and give them a follow, and I hope you enjoy the conversation.
Today on CityCast Boise. For decades, refugees haven't just been finding a home in our city, they've helped shape its identity. But an executive order has abruptly halted Boise's resettlement program. So we're breaking down what this pause means, both for the families caught in limbo and the agency scrambling to support them. It's Wednesday, February 19th. I'm Lindsay Van Allen, and this is what Boise's talking about. I'm so excited to be chatting today with Moses Mukengezi in Holly Beach. Holly works for the Idaho Office of Refugees, and Moses resettled in Idaho as a refugee and works in commercial real estate in Boise. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you, Lindsay, for having us.
Thank you, Lindsay.
So, Moses, I want to start with a question to you. One of the first things that President Trump did when coming to office was sign an executive order pausing America's refugee resettlement program. As someone who has been a refugee from the Democratic Republic of Congo and was able to resettle in Idaho, what's your reaction to Trump's executive order?
My first reaction was I was really, it was sad to see that order go in because I have a relative that has some medical issues and had already been approved to come here. They had hopes that they would come here and get the medical attention they need. And with that order, now they have to wait again, and they don't know if it's even possible for them to come. So they are very stressed, as you can imagine, and they are very, it's a lot going in their mind without knowing what's going to happen.
How much of a setback will this pause create for people like your relative who are partway through this process?
Some of these people have been waiting for years. My relative that I'm talking about has been waiting for 20 years in a refugee camp. They've been vetted for many years, and they were on the last step for them to just kind of go through the interview process and come. And now they're in a limbo. They don't know how long. Even, 6 months is way too much for them. 3 weeks is a long time for them. If you were in a situation that they're in right now, any time matters.
And especially to be on that last step, to be so close, that has to be so devastating.
It's very devastating. People can become depressed. Your whole life changes in the moment that you hear that, you're going to come to the U.S. And then you're so excited, you're so hopeful. And then 2 days later or a week later and nothing happens and you just hear that you can't go anymore.
Holly, was your office and the other organizations you work with surprised by this move from the Trump administration?
We've been watching, we watched the elections campaign very closely, and this was a topic of discussion that this could happen during the first Trump administration too. We saw some bans on certain countries of arrival. We saw a pause. We saw major reductions in refugee arrivals. So not a surprise, but I have been really hit hard by the pain of Idaho families because we did have a lot of people that were very close to bringing their loved ones here through refugee resettlement. One family sold all their stuff, like didn't have a lot, but what they did have, their lease, their livelihood in the second country where they had been displaced to, they had to build some kind of a life there in the meantime. And they got ready to leave, got rid of everything. And then all of a sudden one day it's like, no, you can't come. And so families on both sides here in the U.S. and in that other country are devastated. So I think people might not understand too that a 90-day pause, because right now it's suspended for 90 days and then it will be reviewed. But that doesn't equal a 90-day delay, because this is like a train. It's a big structure, right? So if you slow that train down, we're already seeing across the country, resettlement workers are being laid off. The structure is being hurt. People have, they go through massive, intense, like approval processes. Those expire. So if you miss your window, it doesn't just mean your life changes by 90 days.
And that's definitely something that I agree with you. I don't know that people understand that it's not like, you know, if you were waiting for something to be done, you got to wait one day, you just go the next day, because everybody who is waiting had a date or had appointments. And if those get missed, now it all just builds on each other for everyone in that time period. Were you able to prepare for something like this?
You prepare as much as you can, but at the end of the day, it does have its impacts. Right now in Idaho, you know, our office is open and providing services. Our resettlement agency partners are open and providing services, but it is a strain, and there is a limit for how long that could go on without, you know, these are budgets that were approved by Congress and commitments that were made by our country to other people around the world. So at the end of the day, I would like to see those commitments honored. And if we need to reevaluate anything or take a look at stuff, I just wish it didn't impact people that already had that commitment in the process.
Do you have a sense for how many people were about to be resettled, about to call Idaho their home, Boise their home, but are now in limbo because of this executive order?
Yeah, we had probably over 100 assured cases for Idaho for February. That means people that already had travel dates. And that doesn't include people who are about to come through Welcome Corps, which is a private sponsorship program where Americans can actually raise the money and be the sponsor. And a lot of them were going through Welcome Corps to reunite with family. And so we had some Welcome Corps families that were pretty close. And so it also impacts them.
Moses, can you describe your experience as a refugee? What was that like? And what are some of the things that refugees are experiencing while they're waiting on their chance to resettle?
My experience as a refugee was not a good experience. When I was in a refugee camp where we were, unfortunately, we didn't stay there long as some people have. Some people have been living in a refugee camp for 20 to 25 years. Some kids have been born there that are my age that still live there. But the refugee camp where my family was in, it's called the Gatumba Refugee Camp in the country of Burundi. It's a neighboring country of the Congo. But when we arrived in that refugee camp, unfortunately, it was attacked, and a lot of people died. There was a massacre that happened, and we lost about 168 people, and many more were wounded. And most of them, some of them were my family members.
I'm so sorry.
My refugee journey there in the refugee camp was a little different than most other refugee camps. And later, after that happened, is when my family got a chance to resettle here in Boise. And we were a rare case. We were expedited throughout the process of all the other refugees go through because we had some people in my family that needed medical attention that they couldn't get out in Africa or the neighboring countries by Burundi. So we were able to resettle here in Idaho, in Boise, in 2007. My family loved, we loved Boise. We loved it from the first time we got here, other than the cold weather. So resettling here, I came as a young boy, and I was in middle school. I am very grateful for, you know, the chance to be able to resettle here. They gave my family and I a new life, and we were able not just to impact just the family members that are here, but the ones that are still in Africa that need help.
And you mentioned that your family's process was expedited. Even with an expedited process, how long did it take?
About 4 years.
Wow. So 4 years is like the fast track.
That was a very fast track then, yeah. Now I think it takes longer. So we started 4 years, it took 4 years for us to get here.
Holly, I'm really curious, how did Boise become a city that takes in refugees from around the world? When did that process get started?
Yeah, I love that you asked that because I live here, and obviously it's like, I think one of my favorite things about Boise is the rich community we have here from decades of refugee resettlement. So, you know, Idaho formally joined the refugee resettlement realm with a lot of other states during the Vietnam War era, where a lot of people fleeing the Vietnam region. And so states stepped up and created a program to welcome them. And then that grew into a state refugee program that was housed at Boise State initially, later housed through the state government. And then in the 90s, it became a private nonprofit. So that's what we currently are. We are headquartered in Boise, but we are a state organization, like we serve the whole state. And so since 1975, it's estimated that Boise has welcomed over 35,000 refugees, which sounds like a lot. But when you look at the national population, I think it's 0.7% are from refugee backgrounds.
I think a really interesting part of the resettlement process is that refugees don't get to choose where they get resettled. That's kind of chosen for them. Is Boise situated to be a very welcoming city, or does that create some implications and maybe roadblocks for these refugees?
You know, I'm really proud of Boise, the community here, because for over a decade, for almost 15 years, there's been Neighbors United, and it's a coalition. And it's anywhere from employers to healthcare workers to people who work in transportation or education. They come together and we gather and we meet periodically. And the whole goal is to create a place where people can come and resettle in a way where we're not working in silos, providers are educated and connected, and people can truly thrive. And so that's been going on for 15 years. And the beautiful thing about that is, can you imagine all this work being done by people who serve not only refugees, but anyone in the population? The trauma training that they're getting, the cultural competency training that they're getting, the improvements to transportation, like every single person in our community benefits from these things that's happening. So I think Boise has done a really beautiful job.
I think sometimes we're able to look at Boise and sometimes even on this podcast, we pick it apart a little bit. You know, it's a city with flaws, and sometimes we really focus on those flaws to maybe the expense of some of the really beautiful things that Boise does or Boise aspires to be. So I really appreciate you framing it that way and bringing up the work that is happening here and highlighting it. Holly, what are some of the different places or regions of the world that refugees in Boise are coming from?
Yeah, so people every year come from, you know, up to almost 20 different countries, but we do have trends. So the Democratic Republic of Congo has been the top nation of arrival for many years. In more recent years, we've also seen people from Afghanistan after the U.S. military withdrew. Our allies were in danger. Many of them are still awaiting resettlement and are affected by this pause, and their families are affected. Some of our military allies have families in Pakistan who are about to come, and now Pakistan's going to kick them out. So the urgency there, we can really see. Ukraine also has been one of the top countries of arrival since their war started. And then lately, Spanish has entered our top five languages of arrivals this year for the first time, I think, in like 20 years. So people who are able to have that refugee status pathway from Guatemala or Venezuela are able to come and find safety through the program. So that's been very cool. And Syria as well. I don't want to forget Syria. That's also among our top five.
Moses, we talk on this program a lot about the Boise identity, what it is, what it means. How integral do you feel the refugee community is to this collective Boise identity?
Because I come from that community, I know exactly what it is to be what the refugees can bring to this community and have been bringing to the Boise community. Starting with some good food.
Excellent food.
Excellent food. There's a lot of choices and people and good chefs that come from the refugee community. I can mention one of them that if you haven't gone, it's a good friend of mine. It's Kibroms. It's Ethiopian dish on State Street. If you're hungry the day after this podcast, you should go get some lunch there. There is a lot of good leadership that comes from the refugee community. There's a lot of people that have really have businesses. They have some, like, if you want some African food, grocery store, there's a few that you can go to. There's a lot of leaders that come from different ethnic groups in the refugee community that help their people kind of thrive and start their own lives here in Idaho and work with different groups of businesses here to get them jobs. If you talk about workforce, there's a lot of refugee community here, I think, that drive the workforce of Boise and Twin Falls as well. Chobani has been able to be one of the biggest supporters of them there. And it's not just them supporting the refugees, but the refugees are bringing all their efforts to help the company as well. So the workforce has been benefited throughout the years with the refugee population. And it's just, you know, people here in Boise are welcoming and they care about each other. And I think the refugee population have also been able to see that and kind of just assimilated and are part of the society in here.
What are we losing as a community with this program being paused?
You know, we're losing that. First is the human connections, different, you know, experiences, different ideas, because we're from different. I love my culture because it's, you know, I have two different cultures. I have the Americans. I was able to grow up here, so I have the American culture and the African culture. And to get the blended, I feel like I have superpowers. And sometimes I know that I have some friends that I have impacted in that way that have also that taught me vice versa.
Moses, Trump and his supporters have been very critical about immigrants and refugees in the United States. And nearly 54% of voters in Ada County supported him enough to vote for him. So I'm curious, in your perspective, is Boise and maybe the U.S. in general still a safe and welcoming place for refugees to come?
Boise, I think Boise is still a safe place for refugees to come. Obviously, there is always, you know, the fear of the unknowing and what's it gonna be like with the new administration? What's it gonna be like when, you know, all the hate is spread all over the state and people are met with more circumstances that weren't there before? But I think Boise is strong enough to be able and resilient enough to stay the way they were. And I believe that people have, you know, you can have your own opinions on who you like and what you like in the government. But I feel like the Boise community is stronger together. And I don't think they're going to lose their identity just because of who's leading the country.
Holly, what does this pause mean for your colleagues? Will people potentially lose their jobs, or is the focus of the work just shifting?
Yeah, the pause does mean that we might lose resettlement jobs in my office and at our partner resettlement agencies, because we are funded through a federal budget. It's a federal policy that has humanitarian and economic benefits, so that's where our funding has come from. And so when that is not happening, there's no way to maintain the same level of operation. Before, you know, a few years ago during the initial kind of slowdown and pause of resettlement, we, you know, World Relief used to operate in Boise. It's a different resettlement agency that does great work, and they closed down. And so that was a permanent change in the local resettlement landscape. So, you know, I'm just taking it day by day, and I'm really encouraged to see that there has been a lawsuit filed that does challenge the pause in resettlement and shows the harm that it's causing to real people. And so we're keeping an eye on that and hopeful that we can get back to work as soon as possible. I mean, we're still working and operating, but get back to our full level of work that we were doing.
On January 24th, resettlement agencies received a stop work order from the Secretary of State that directed you to stop administering reception and placement. And that's a program that's crucial for covering basic necessities for refugees like food and rent while they get settled and find employment. What kind of an impact is this order having on the local refugee communities?
So resettlement agencies have been very resilient, finding creative solutions. Business partners, community members are really stepping up to help fill some of these gaps, which they've always done. Resettlement has always been a community partnership with community donations helping meet, close those gaps. But really right now we are seeing more and more churches, big businesses step in and help fill the gaps. So that's kind of why I say day by day, because there's a challenge, there's a solution, and it's just keep pushing day by day to make sure that no one falls through the cracks. Local churches are talking about how they can adopt newcomer families in that very critical time of resettlement when they're just brand new, and making sure that they have what they need. So I think it's beautiful to see people coming together to help fill those gaps in the meantime.
What are some ways our listeners could get involved or donate or help these organizations after in the meantime, while this stop work order is happening?
Yeah, I get to see it all the time because I work in refugee resettlement, but there is a huge heart for resettlement in Idaho. And I think something you can do is organize and show that on a more public level, like, hey, this is something we really care about. You can share your voice with people in elected positions. You can share your voice with your families. I've had a lot of conversations with people and getting to a better understanding about what this means. Donations are so critical right now. If you have a little bit extra to donate to one of the local resettlement agencies, donate to Idaho Office for Refugees, it will really help cover these gaps when it comes to, potentially losing staff or people potentially losing their welcome funding.
I just wanted to add to what Holly's saying, and also say thank you to all these organizations that have stepped up and helped, again, the Boise community, because when I first got here, I was, I came with a single father with 11 kids. He couldn't work. And the one kid that was over 18 that could get a job was also needed medical attention. So can you imagine 11 people the day after you arrive and all the funding stops? I don't know how we could have survived. But families that are in the same position that we were in back then, that just got here to Idaho, are being, they're going to survive only because of the community rallying together and helping the agencies that are trying to help them out. So there is real people that are being affected. We just need to be able to come together and help them out.
And I do want to add, people who come through resettlement, initially they do get extra support and they do get some public funding. But I can't imagine being all of a sudden I'm in China and I don't know what to do, having no help. So it's that initial investment in a human, and then they get on their feet, then they get a job. I mean, if you look at the contributions back into our public system by people who came through seeking refugee status and asylum, it's $124 billion more in a 15-year period of what they contribute to the public system than what they ever got when they were being welcomed. So it is an investment initially, but people go on, look at Moses's life, a leader in our community, he's growing his own family and he's working, and it's just people wanted a safe place. And so even though there is that, let's donate, let's support them initially, they go on to give so much more back to the community.
Thank you both for coming on the show and sharing your experiences and your expertise with this topic with our community and helping us learn more about it and how we can get involved.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
That's all for today here on CityCast Boise. If you enjoyed the show, make sure and leave us a review so other people can find our podcast too. We'll be back tomorrow morning with a local pastor to discuss what role she thinks religion should play in politics. You won't want to miss it.